Hello. Don't you ever.
Good morning.
Good morning. Don't you ever criticize me about my John Mayer song again.
It does have a good message, though.
That was.
But the whole thing is like, you know, it blows away. It's impermanent.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
It's going to screw you up. Actually, if you listen to the whole song, it's really cool. I mean, and it came out during the crack epidemic of the 80s.
Yeah, I bet. It was,
so it's an anti-drug message. But that man, was, that song gets me going every time.
You had to be here. With
oh, this, yeah. There was gestures and all
gestures. We had a poll. We had been beaten at our show.
Yeah, I was dancing, but not really.
So this is Sober Life Radio.
Yep. So.
And I'm Joel Yeager.
We didn't trigger anyone this
beautiful
morning.
Beautiful Carrie Loeffler.
Oh,
I don't think we did. No. But that was, I love the bass.
Yeah.
And that stuff. You have to dance. You can sing anything. You can, when you put bass in a song and little jam, like you can say, I want to hate everybody.
Bass.
Right.
I have one. Used to play it. Don't play it so much anymore.
Oh, I have a bass too.
It's jam.
We could. I know. I dust.
It'd be terrible.
I dust mine off. That's all I do.
I hate to say it, but.
No, I do. I have a real bass. I have a left-handed Hofner.
Oh.
Yeah, like a real like a real expensive guitar that I dust it.
See, it kind of makes me feel better. I just was doing some remodeling in my house, and I had to move some stuff around.
Like what'd you move around?
Everything. I had the carpets all replaced in my house, so everything had to come out of the rooms and then get put back in. But in that process, I was moving. You know, everything I own, basically. And yeah, I've got a guitar, I've got a bass, I've got like a mixer and a sampler and all
that
stuff.
I've been there, yeah. You got a whole studio. It looks like a studio, like a music studio.
And I'm like, what?
Why don't we should start a band? We could start the Sober Life Band. We'll call it something else because that sounds lame. We'll
have to get Sober Life Band.
Yeah, it's like we do heavy metal polka music.
We have two people at our shows.
Yeah. Well, we have a fan base. People will come just to torment us. I think that's good.
Speaking of, kind of, I watched the trailer for that movie.
You know, it's so funny.
What? I got to ask you. What are you drinking?
I'm drinking shitty iced tea. You want to hear a terrible story about this whole thing. So, because first of all, I've been in a couple movies. This is the first time I ever actually made it into a trailer, which I think that's pretty funny. But, so that morning we're shooting. I'm trying to think what. Oh, we're at McGinnity's. Pub where they shot the scene, and so they put us, like, if you've ever been in a movie before, they stage you around into the set, and I'm a background specialist, so I'm just the guy in the back, like the background. Once in a while I get a line, but not rarely. So they, first of all, they sat us at tables and they shot this one, they shot that scene you saw, and the director, who's a great director, Bradley Hawkins, said, no, they got to be doing something. They got me moving. They can't just be talking. They're at a bar. These are a biker bar. And they got all these tattooed guys up. So he goes, well, we got to do something. So they washed out some dirty beer bottles like the guy did. And they said, this stuck in water and cleaned it out a little bit. And then he said, well, you got to put something in it. So he made some shitty ice. They were going to put cold coffee for the morning.
No, I guess just swore.
Oh, really? I didn't realize. Sorry
Dave. Beep.
So he had to be there. Yeah, in the moment. So he fills it up with. He makes iced tea. I think that's what it was, but it was out of probably soapy dishwater, and they filled it up in a bottle, so it looked like something was in the bottle.
Yeah,
because these were all clear, Corona bottles or whatever. So then they shoot the scene again. Director goes, no, you got to be moving. We have to be doing it. You got to at least pretend like you're drinking it. Now, this was terrible to crappy. I can say crappy,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I can say crappy.
Warm, soapy iced tea. And I had to pretend like I was liking it and talking to people. So that's what I was drinking that morning.
I didn't even think about it because I shared the trailer on the Sober Lady.
Yeah, then
Radio
and Domingos said, what were you drinking?
I'm like, oh, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, no.
So for anybody that may have seen the trailer, we clarified. Joel was not drinking a beer.
No,
he was drinking
soapy,
poopy
iced tea. And I had to make, and if you look at it, because it's
that
like,
word, by the way.
Right.
So poopy.
Because I remember, like, I was very careful not to let it go in my mouth. But, he wants, like, no, drink it. Like, he wants to get the best out of a scene.
Well, you looked pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm actually in two parts in the trailer twice. The guy turning the magazine to him.
Oh,
in
a suit. I thought I saw your hand at one point.
Yeah. So that was the first time I made the trailer twice. That's good. That movie's coming out in March. They're going to do a premiere here in Rochester.
Let's go. I'll be there. Will,
yeah. It's pretty, very exciting. Pretty funny movie.
Yeah. So. Very cool. We'll go.
Okay.
Speaking of local events, there's an event coming up tomorrow.
Really?
That I'm going to be at Rocco Stagnito. Some of you local folks may have heard of him, or even if you're not local, you may have seen some of the videos that he's been featured in. He's been on the news multiple times lately.
Mm-hmm.
But his son passed away fairly recently behind a house in a known drug area here in Rochester.
Right.
Well, anyways, he organized a city cleanup effort. So there's going to be a bunch of people behind this house cleaning up needles and...
Really?
Whatever. But yeah, he's partnered with Trillium and the city of Rochester and whatnot. So that's going on tomorrow.
That's great.
Yeah. Freaks me out just a little bit, though. You know, I know they got some stuff from Trillium. They got Sharps containers and whatnot. But people, here's a public service announcement.
You
have
to be careful.
You have to be very careful. You have to pay attention to what you're wearing on your feet. Don't just use rubber gloves. You need to have something that's impenetrable.
Right.
I actually had a needle stick incident a couple of years ago at work. There was a bunch of needles outside, and I went to go pick them up. I brought a Sharps container with me. I had rubber gloves, but I wasn't really paying attention to my footwear. And very long story short, I ended up getting the tip of a needle in my foot. Scared the crap out of me. Went through the whole thing, went to the hospital, where I was treated very poorly, actually, if you remember me telling you the story.
Sure.
They looked at me with my tattoos, and somebody at the hospital actually said to me, I kid you not, well, you don't look like you're afraid of needles.
Yeah, I know. I hate when they say
that. And here I am bugging out because I'm thinking, I just stepped on a dirty, nasty hypodermic needle, and you're cracking jokes?
This is why I know. And you think right now because the medical community is all tattooed up. But
I ended up actually going to Trillium because I got no help at the hospital that I went to.
They understand a little better?
Yeah, I contacted a friend of mine, and I was like in near tears at this point, thinking, oh my gosh, how ironic would this be? You know, I go my whole life without contracting something, and then I step on a needle trying to clean it up, and I get something. But she connected me to Trillium, and they were great. They did the rapid testing, and like I said, luckily nothing came of it. He said that they'd been in the street, so any like UV exposure would have killed any HIV viruses.
Yeah, I used to get, when I was tattooing, I would get needles stuck all the time.
Really?
Yeah, because when you, what you do, tattoo artists are known for this. Person has been tattooed, like in the business for a long time, the end of their tips of their fingers have like little dots because we get, when we're cleaning off the tube, you have to run the needle into a paper towel or tissue. It doesn't matter if you're in a glove on or not. And sometimes it just gets through and you get stuck.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's always been that's why, you know, Hep C and stuff has always been rampant in the tattoo business for the people that work there, not necessarily the customers, but I always, you know, then you clean it out and there's all kinds of process you have to do after to make sure it's not.
But
it's pretty nasty, that stuff. Yeah, I can't, I'm looking at your shirt. Carrie's got a pussy in her pocket and I don't even know. Right. That is great. I'm not going to say what it's doing.
Well, I have a shirt. It's a black shirt and it looks like there's a white cat sticking out of my pocket. And then you pull the pocket down, and he's flipping you off.
Wow.
That's how I feel about most things.
You didn't get that at Penny's.
I'm all nice and
did you get that
polite
at
on the outside. No, I got it at Zoomies, actually.
Oh, probably.
Lord Nermal is his name.
Yeah,
so that's how I feel. I put on a good facade, but really I want to say F you to everybody.
Yeah.
Not everybody.
Not everybody.
A lot of people.
Some people.
So
some
this
people
I can do, I can look at Joel and be like,
yeah, no, because she does that a lot to me.
No, I love Joel.
Yeah, I love you, too. So, what, you know, it's so funny, well, Penny's is actually, a lot of them are going out of business. I don't know if you heard about that.
I did. I saw that in the news today.
Yeah, they're closing a lot of stores, which is, I don't know. I shop at Penny's because sometimes they have my size.
I was actually banned for life from JCPenney's.
I believe. Still?
Well, no. Well, it was a life ban, but I was 20, 21 when it happened.
Right.
I was stealing from there.
Yeah.
I was actually taken down by a security guard in the middle of Penny's in front of a child, and I'll never forget this. I started to take off because I knew that I heard like the of the microphone.
Right.
So I started to, you know, get some pep in my step and take off, and he tackled me. A JCPenney security guard tackled me in JCPenney's, and there was a, kid was probably 4 or 5 years old.
Right.
And I was just mortified. And all, it was like slow motion, like tunnel vision. All I could see was this child as I'm being taken to the ground by the security guard. But yeah, it was.
Did the kid say anything to you?
No, or? The look on his face, he was just like mortified. Like, what is happening? Who's this crazy person that's being tackled? Why is someone tackling her? But yeah, I was actually given a life ban, which really, how are you going to enforce that? I was like 20 years old at the time. I looked a lot different than I do now. And
yeah,
you know. But for years, even to this day, actually, I still get a little bit of anxiety when I walk in
Penny's. Like, the guy's probably a lot older now. I don't think he can probably catch you.
I don't
maybe.
Even think that they would. It's like an unenforceable policy. How do you enforce that?
Yeah, one time I actually watched people shoplifting, and I think they got caught later. But I was just really poor. They not even good at it, so... But maybe that's the ones that do get away with it. Like, they're just picking stuff up and putting it in their bag. I mean, that was...
Well, and that's how it works, too. And my dad, I don't know why. When I was young, he didn't, teach me this, but he said something one time about, you know, people that get away with stuff like that are the people that are the most obvious. Because you just act like you're supposed to be there, like you're supposed to be doing something.
Right.
You can walk into a store and grab something and walk out with it, but you have confidence because people weren't going to think, oh, this person's stealing something.
Right, you have to walk. It's when you walk out and you're looking around and,
Yeah, and I really wish I could remember the context of why my dad was telling me that, because it had nothing to do with stealing, but I think it had something to do with, being confident in what you're doing. So he's a businessman, so
right.
Probably.
If you're stealing, you're going to be in there shoplifting again, Gary.
Thanks for the advice, Dad.
You need to look confident.
But that's the thing, too. You get away with something for so long. You know, I got away with stuff for years, and then eventually it catches up to you. And in my experience, once it catches up to you, it keeps on catching
right
up.
Well, it's so funny because they always have the lady at the Walmart, and you always look at her like, are you supposed to show her the receipt when you're walking?
I always feel so guilty. I know. Nothing wrong.
Right, and they still want you. Well, some people they let by, some people they don't, which I think is funny.
Right.
You know, you could be an African-American man, you're walking out with a big TV set.
Yeah.
And they're going to stop you. Like, really? Do you think the guy carried it from the front? And it's just walking out the door. I mean, it's sad. They profile people. I mean, that's wrong, but they do, I think.
Well, of course.
You know.
It's like, I swear every time I go to the airport, I'm the one that gets pulled aside and has to get my hands swabbed and has to go through these extra measures.
Because you look kind of sketchy.
Did I ever tell you the story when I was in California? I was coming back from California, actually, and I got pulled over as usual. They had me do like the palm swab and whatnot, and they had me go through the special line. And then they pulled me over to the side area, and they had my carry-on bag.
Really?
And they got real serious. And they were talking about how I had to stay there, and they were going to run some tests on my bag. And I'm freaking out. And I'm, like, clean and sober, and I'm like, what is going on? You know, this conspiracy theories are running through my head. Like, they're going to detain me. I'm going to be in jail for no reason. Come to find out, my suntan lotion had spilled in my bag, so there was some sort of, like, residue.
Yeah.
That
did it smell
like
cocoa
a red flag
butter?
For them. Well, that's what I'm saying. It smelled like coconuts and like,
it's not
like
usually
shea
like
butter. I'm like, but yeah, it was this whole big thing. And, you know, come to find out, it was just my suntan lotion.
But who's the guy that got away who had to carry a gun all the way through security? Well, and
what's funny about that story is that same trip, my ex at the time had a Zippo lighter with her. And she didn't even realize it. It was like a collectible thing. She wasn't a smoker or anything, but, yeah, on that same flight, she ended up with an active, like it had fluid in it, a Zippo lighter. And here I am getting pulled aside and my book bags being run through a machine and tests are being run on it because of suntan lotion.
That's insane.
But
that's sort of it. Well, sort of insane. You know what's insane? I was watching all the news feed about Spicer. That's his name.
Sean Spicer. So
on the news, on the, you know, doing the press conference stuff for the White House. But it's interesting in how he's trying to compare. Well, first of all, he's like bumbling through this whole thing about medical marijuana and regular marijuana, which I thought was interesting. And then he throws in the opiate epidemic like it was part of all of this. And there's this a law of being human that I always think people should stick to, is when you don't know something, don't say anything.
Yep.
That's just that basic law. Because now they're going to go after everything. Like, he had an opinion. He didn't even know. He don't even remember that he even had this conversation, I'm sure. Because he looked, the way he was just talking about, he didn't know what to say. And
right.
They were talking about legalization of stuff. And then he throws in the opiate epidemic, which is
right,
very
like
sad.
Right, like he correlated. He made the connection between legalization of marijuana and the opiate epidemic.
Yeah, which
hey,
is... Right.
What? You know what started the opiate epidemic?
Yeah.
The overprescribing of narcotic pain medication. So the government.
Yeah, pharmaceuticals.
Guess what? You're to blame.
Yeah, FDA, everyone involved in that, who is still involved in that. And I still go back to it. It's still happening, folks, because of now the VA, I mean, that's they're just noticing, wow, what are we going to do now with all these vets on, you know, that has a full-blown opiate addiction because we prescribed opiates, you know, for their pain, which made sense. I mean, some of them are, very, you know, there are a lot of these injuries are very painful, but now we're just stuck again. We'll never get out of this. I don't know how we're going to get out of that part of it. And I've even had people, you know, people that I've known, you know, with full-blown a heroin addiction, they go to a doctor and they come back with a bottle full of pills. I mean, still today, they don't.
Yeah.
It's not, that's not going to go away. No. And I don't know what.
You prescribe them Suboxone.
Yeah.
That can cause some problems too, you know?
Yeah, because it's so funny because you knew the pharmaceutical company has to now, they're going to try to save the world with Suboxone or something else.
Of course.
Right. That's not, yeah, because that just follow the money. When you want to learn about anything, always follow the money. And then that determines where things are always going.
I'm seeing more and more clients that are coming through, and I'm a big fan so far of Vivitrol.
Right.
Because they're coming through on Vivitrol, and I'll ask them a little bit about that. You know, how's that going for you? And time again, they're saying, it's great. I can't do Suboxone. I've been prescribed it many times. I always end up abusing it, or they get on it. And for whatever reason, they lose their prescription, whether it's something, you know, that they did, like they violated the terms of the, you know, the contract that they're on. Or I had somebody that was moving from one state to another and their prescription got cut. They couldn't find a doctor in Rochester in time. So there was a gap in their prescription.
Right.
And they were going through withdrawal. So you go to what you know next. But so anyways, there's so many things.
Well, they go to the Suboxone man. The Suboxone man's everywhere.
Yeah.
He hangs out at meetings. The Suboxone man does, and it is a big thing. But that's not gonna. What's interesting? We talked about that earlier in the green room. How some physicians in California are prescribing naltrexone, which is the oral version of Vivitrol, right? To actually help people drink socially. I thought he said that's interesting, but we knew this was coming. That, and it works. Well, the people I know that's doing it, it's working for. I don't know if their behaviors changed or not, but full blown alcoholics are using naltrexone now.
Right. So you're saying like this one person that you know in particular was a full blown
alcoholic,
drinking alcoholically, and it is now can have like a beer at a bar with his buddies and walk away.
Yeah.
It's very,
very interesting. Or he would drink at all, like for weeks at a time, and then might have a glass of wine at dinner and stop.
Right.
And where he never could have before. Yeah, it's interesting. But I don't know if it was never meant for that. But, you know, in California, they look at things differently than we do. It's a different kind of, other than they're drowning now with the floods. But,
hey, you know.
I don't even know. Like the guy we're having, who's coming on today?
So his name is Seth Leif Pruzanski, and I hope I pronounced that correctly. But if I didn't, he'll be telling you when he comes on.
Seth Leif.
Sounds like a very interesting, I know we use that word a lot on the show, actually. I noticed when I listen to our podcast, we say interesting quite a bit. But we do have a lot of interesting people.
We do.
Sounds like he's very into meditation and kind of like the spiritual side of things. Got clean on his own, it sounds like, which I love hearing. I like hearing stories about that. But he's very big on self-empowerment and how you alone can heal yourself, how you can get clean and sober on your own. Which, you know, being a alcohol and substance abuse counselor, I guess I shouldn't say that I condone
no, I
that.
Do.
But that's how I got clean.
I think people
and sober.
Should people just like, you know, okay, let's go back to this because we had a discussion before. We are, because that's what we're all about here. Because we talked about having that word sober in our tag or actually our business name. Because sober means so many things. It doesn't. You can be 90 in recovery and be sober. It has nothing to do with anything. We are not part of anything.
Right. Yeah. Can I say that again? Because I had something come up this morning.
Yeah.
And someone said something to me about, so you guys are like really affiliated, I hear, with AA. And I was like dumbfounded. Like, what do you listen to the show? Because we are not
We're not affiliated
with anybody.
We're with ourselves.
Sober. It's because in the recovery community, especially if you are in 12-step, if you're in the rooms, 12-step programs,
right.
There's this divide for some reason. Like people that attend Narcotics Anonymous, they go, you know, I'm clean. My clean day, it's clean, clean, clean.
Right.
People that are in AA, it's I'm sober, my sobriety date.
Right.
And it's like there's this battle, which is correct. Clean, sober, clean, sober. Clean is associated with A or NA. Sober is associated with AA.
Right.
Who cares? Who cares?
We're FA.
Who cares?
We're FA. Right. That's we are.
I can't say it, but
yes, we are. We're good. Maybe we should have a little meeting.
We're not affiliated, folks. We're not affiliated.
Anything.
We don't have a lot of friends that are associated with the show that are in what they call it, mutual aid groups now.
We have a lot of friends
that are in AA. We have friends that are in NA. We support whatever. If you go to 12-step meetings and it's keeping you clean and sober, more power to you. If you don't, more power to you too. Whatever works.
Yeah, don't ever. Whatever. This is crazy.
Like, why argue over that stuff? Nitpick over clean versus sober.
Yeah, I'm hoping
our audience
is a lot of different people. You know, I think that's the best part of it. People that listen. I have a woman listening now. She's a great nurse in Hornell named Sue,
mm-hmm.
who just a great nurse of addiction, but she treats everything as more of a holistic.
Yeah.
View of life. And that's what you're supposed to do.
Right.
You're never supposed to just pick anything. Because really, drugs and alcohol is a tiny symptom of this entire disease and problem. And I don't know what we are anymore. But I think we're having a good time. And it's rainy in Rochester right now.
And I just got a message from my friend Nicole that's listening to the show. Thank you very much, Nicole. She's the one that actually gave me, that I was talking to this morning that made mention of that whole thing of why people think that we're probably affiliated with AA because the word sober is in our title.
We're not, Nicole. We're really...
No, she knows that.
Yeah.
But
is Nicole hot?
Oh my gosh, Joel, that's the first thing Joel goes to. We should get the people from Kavod back on here.
Yeah.
Sexual addictions. Joel. It's the first thing Joel goes to. Is she hot?
No. Not really.
He's not really like that, though.
I am not
You're
like
very
that.
Very kind and genuine person.
I am.
Nicole thinks you're very funny, by the way, she told me.
Really? Mm-hmm. How funny am I, Nicole?
Oh, man, we digress. Well, I guess it's that point in the show, right, where we should probably switch over to some music and get ready for our guest to come on.
Yeah, that sounds great. Still looking at Carrie's pussy in a pocket.
All right, we'll be back, guys.
We'll be back. All right, we're back, little Foo Fighters.
Yes, and we are here, and I hope I'm going to pronounce this correctly, and feel free to correct me if I don't, but we are here with Seth Leif Pruzanski. Did I say it right, Seth?
Oh, my God, one of the best I've ever heard.
Yeah, she's really good at that.
So, perfect pronunciation, my goodness.
Well, thank you. So how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing amazing, just unbelievable. Despite all the perceived chaos in the world, I'm just content. And there's a reason for it.
More than perceived, I think, Seth.
Yeah,
yes.
I think it's...
Yes.
So where are we talking to you from right now? Whereabouts are you located?
I am in the beautiful global warming state of Maine, which...
Oh, I love Maine.
Happens to be a lot... It's amazing up here. I mean, it's just, I've lived here my whole life. I've traveled around the world, but I always come back here. But I got to say, the past 2 years, I think, have been the warmest on record, and it's really showing, you know?
Yeah, I've been, But, you know, I go up there periodically because I'm a big fan of Kenny Bunkport. But, you know what it is? You know, it's interesting because, where is it, Freeport, where L.O. Bean's at?
Yep. Yeah,
right. Because I always go there. The only problem is when you go there, the town closes up at like 9 o'clock at night, so you can't even get something to eat. I always thought that was kind of odd. But.
Yeah, it is, especially when L.L. Bean open all night. So.
Yeah. You have to get the dirty L.L. Bean hot dog in the middle of the night. I say that affectionately.
Of course.
Well, we certainly won't spend our entire time talking to you about L.L. Bean, but why don't you, I mean, tell us a little bit about yourself. I mean, you've got, God, we only have like 25 minutes, 30 minutes to talk to you. You have such an incredible story. So at this point, we'll just turn it over to you. Tell us a little bit about yourself and what got you to what you do right now.
Okay, I'm going to try to condense this into a cohesive format.
Okay.
I'm going to start off with this. When I was a child, I was somebody who was very perceptively aware of energy and of my own life and the way I lived in this world. And I could tell that the way things seemed to be were not really or not necessarily the only way they were. I knew there was a greater and a bigger way. I just wasn't necessarily able to perceive it. So as I grew up and went through schools, you know, I began to lose this connection that I had, this understanding of feeling these deeper meanings of life. And we moved when I was about 12 or 13, and I got bullied really, really bad in school, like severe bullying. And that kind of catapulted me into finding ways to deal with it because my parents weren't helping me, the school counselors weren't helping me, nobody was. And I turned to drugs. You know, I first started smoking pot, which I grew up in kind of a communal environment, so to me that wasn't a big deal.
Right.
But, in this search for, why is this happening to me? Why are all this trauma? Like, what is this stuff? I needed stronger drugs, harder drugs to deal with these perceived traumas and realities that I was experiencing on such an ongoing basis. So while I never got into alcohol for some reason, I became very addicted to heroin.
Yeah.
And cocaine and, all that stuff. But it was all the hard drugs, but it was mostly heroin. I had a really bad heroin addiction that went on for about 3 years. And I started that when I was 19 years old. And I went until I was 22 years old doing that 3 years. Countless overdoses, not countless, probably about 9 or 10, like really severe overdoses,
right.
Waking up in vomit and urine, just to the point where it's like, okay, if I finally got the picture, if I do not stop doing this, I will die. And, waking up and realizing this is not the kind of life that, I want to live or that anybody who loves me would want me to choose for myself. So, at that young age, I manned up and I just kicked that habit. And I kicked it cold turkey. I had one friend who did it with me. He was going through it. We did it together. And we just kicked cold turkey and never went back to it again. And it was such brutal hell, as anybody knows who's
oh,
done
yeah.
that.
Do you vividly remember that experience? Do you remember what it felt when you were kicking and...
Oh, my God. I've written chapters about it, so literally have. So, yeah, it's one of the most, aside from, having your skin peeled off your body or
yeah.
right.
something like that, it's mental, emotional,
oh,
physical,
yeah.
and spiritual torture. It's like torture on every level of your being, and there's no way out of it except for to go through
yep.
it.
Oh, I got to say, too, it's hysterical because people are always saying, it's like comparable to the flu. People that say that have no idea what
right.
heroin withdrawal is like because it is not comparable to the flu. It's like you said, it impacts you on so many different levels than just being, sick physically.
And somebody who might be mildly addicted to something and going through a weak withdrawal, I don't know. For me, I was in it. Big. I was
right.
massive amounts of it, So when I kicked, it was like death, literally
yes.
on death. Like you can't walk, you can't talk, you can't eat, you can't sleep,
yep.
you can't drink water. You're so dehydrated. You want to cry with everything you've got because
yeah.
it hurts so bad, but you can't because you're so dehydrated.
Yep.
It's just, it's hell. It's very much like a hell on earth
yes.
scenario. But anyway, I kicked it. Without any help, just my friend and I supporting each other, got through it, never went back to it again. However, what I didn't heal at that point was kind of what caused the addiction in the first place, these mental pathologies. And, I didn't understand what they were at that time, but I could feel that I was still stuck in this idea of, there's something there. There's something bothering me. What is it? And I began to replace my addiction to drugs with food.
Mm-hmm.
And, people look at me, I'm really fit and I'm thin, and people are like, you don't have any food problems, you're in perfect shape and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, yeah, I have a high metabolism, but I'm eating for emotional reasons to fill this gap that drugs used to fill.
Mm-hmm.
And So eventually what happened was by eating lots of sugars and things that were not good for me, it messed up my body really bad until I came down with what's called systemic candidiasis, or candida, they call it.
Huh.
And this stuff completely just ravaged my body. I mean, ravaged it. It was so bad, it looked like I had third-degree burns, you know, coming out over three-quarters of my body. And, you know, while all this stuff is going on, I consider myself an overzealous entrepreneur. And I've been forming businesses and companies since I was really young, and I have a lot of vision when it comes to creating sustainable and healthy and conscious business structures in the world. And I learned at a young age that I was very good at it. So while I'm going through, you know, while I'm building these companies and doing all this stuff, I'm really, really sick, and I'm, you know, like hanging on for dear life at a few points. And so I'm seeing doctors all over the world, MDs, NDs, you know, nobody has any answers for me. I'm going to dermatologists. They can't figure out what's going on. It's something coming from the inside. Any bit of food I was eating was causing me to get sick. I had to begin juice fasting. I didn't eat solid food, and I only could do juice fasting for almost a year straight. I mean, I became literally like a stick figure. I lost all my weight. The condition wasn't going away. It was really, really vicious.
Wow.
And it was causing me to not be able to sleep at night. And literally staying up all night and just kind of hating my life, you know, really just like feeling like the biggest victim in the world. Like, why would this happen? Why can't I overcome it? What's the root of all this? What's causing it? And, you know, out of desperation, I went and was prescribed sleeping medication just so I could sleep. And yeah, I knew with my addictive past, you know, I was walking down a slippery slope, but I just needed relief, yeah. You know? And so I got on sleeping pills. It was like hallelujah for a little while because they worked so great, and I was able to sleep and get some relief, which actually brought a little bit of relief to my symptoms. And however, like all those things go, you begin to build up a tolerance.
Mm-hmm.
And that tolerance isn't good enough by what you're being prescribed. And then you start to look for other avenues to get it, and then doctor shopping and trying to get more drugs, and then you're a raging drug addict all over again on prescription pharmaceuticals, which I have, you know, being a natural health strategist and advocate and connoisseur, you know, pharmaceuticals don't really fit into my belief system.
Right.
That I try to minimize my belief system. That's another story. Try not to believe anything because there's way more going on than I could ever believe, but that's another story. So as a result of going through all that, my bills were insane. I mean, I was just out of control with bills, and I couldn't afford all this, so I began selling a lot of marijuana.
Yeah.
And then selling a lot more marijuana, and just,
right.
You know, because I'm an entrepreneur. I'm a literal, like I said, I'm an overzealous entrepreneur.
Yeah.
So, you know, the entrepreneurial mindset is having multiple things going on at the same time because it's a passion. It's something that I love to do. And so in addition to these legitimate businesses that I had, I was selling pot on the side to pay for all my bills. But then the money was so good that, you know, I was like, okay, great. I can start saving some money. And I was planning on buying a farm out in the middle of the woods and getting away from it all. And that's what I was trying to do. That I was a big giant disaster. I was addicted to sleeping pills. I got arrested.
Mm-hmm.
I got indicted, sentenced, got a 5-year sentence in federal prison.
Wow.
And at my sentencing hearing, I was basically, you know, I had my doctors there. I had all these people trying to say, look, if you put him in prison without care, he could become very ill. It could be fatal. And regardless of that, it's going to be a nightmare. He's really, truly going to suffer.
Yeah.
And they said they were going to put me in a medical prison, but they didn't. They put me in a regular prison.
Wow.
And at that point, you know, I got there, the PA says to me, he's like, oh, you're not supposed to be here, the prison PA, the physician's assistant.
Yeah.
I was like, I know. Like, what am I going to do? Like, he said, well, we can't take care of these your needs here. And I was like, well, can you get me to where I need to be? And he's like, well, here's what's going to happen. When you become so ill that you can no longer stand on your 2 feet, we're going to strap you to a stretcher, and we're going to ship you to a medical prison. Wow. Oh, and by the way, make sure to wear long sleeve shirts and shorts at all times, because if other inmates see those scabs on your body, they're gonna freak out and think it's contagious, and they are going to have you put in segregation. You know, the shoe, isolated containment.
This is ridiculous.
It is, but yeah, so believable.
Yeah.
So believable. But, you know, little did I know at the time that this was the greatest opportunity of my life. And believe me, at the time, I did not see it as that at all, because what it was doing something very specific to me and empowering me to realize that, guess what? Here it is. Nobody is coming to my rescue. No one.
Right.
If I'm going to overcome all of these issues that I've been dealing with since my late teens, really, my early teens, then it's going to be me. And so what do I do? What do I do? How do I overcome this? So the first thing was like, well, I'm going to meditate. I'm going to meditate every day for hours a day. And I couldn't do it, because how do you find self-peace? You know, how do you find inner peace in such a brutal environment, you know? But I said, you know what? I'm just going to keep doing it anyway. The other thing was, all right, I'm going to write my entire life story, everything that I remember from birth till now, so that I can look for patterns. It's like, okay, yeah, I'm here because I was selling pot,
right,
but there's got to be a deeper reason. There's psychological and psycho-emotional triggers that have caused me to make decisions that are really just so temerarious or reckless, and I want to know what those are. I want to understand them better for myself. So I did that, and right away this pattern became evident. And so it became like I was observing myself from a place outside of myself. And within about a year to a year of writing this book and, you know, looking at my life and really considering it and sitting in meditation and really working my mind to come to terms with the past and all these things that led me to be where I am, I had this profound epiphany. And out of nowhere, it was like, oh my gosh, I've literally created a neural network in my brain, a habit of believing that I'm this victim. It all started with being bullied. You know, being bullied. I literally created a physical structure in my brain that is so used to identifying with the trauma of the past that I'm unconsciously going about and recreating experiences, mostly not even realizing that I'm doing it, that are going to feed this biochemical electrical rush that this brain mass in my head formed from trauma needs in order to sustain itself. So really all that I did essentially was create a bad habit without knowing I'd created a bad habit of feeling like the world was out to get me.
Yes.
And when I realized that, that's all it was. That's literally all it was. And when I realized that, then it was like, oh my God, I'm just going to form a new habit, a new neural network by loving life and identifying with what I have available to me right here and right now. I don't have to think about the past. I don't have to think about the future. All I have to do is be grateful for the fact that my heart is beating, that my lungs are breathing, that thoughts are arising in my mind, and recognizing that there's this innate intelligence in my body that is causing all these miraculous autonomic functions to happen. And if this life force that's in me is able to allow these things in my body to happen, then certainly I, with my little bit of intelligence from my egotistical self, you could call it, if I align what little bit of intelligence I have with that intelligence, then surely I can trust that it will give me greater guidance and clarity on how to conduct myself as a human being in this world. And it did. And suddenly everything changed.
Sure.
I got healthy in prison, and I was eating foods that I could never eat before.
Right.
You know, I started like getting big and putting on all this muscle and just looking like this, you know, super vibrant, shiny person. And, you know, it was just amazing. And so I went through that whole experience. I got out, and I formed a fantastic company, a new company after I got out. We make the highest quality, most ethically produced bottled water in the world. So I'm like literally selling the purest substance that most people will ever come into contact with. And it's really, really taking off. And a lot of that is because I was able to obtain the inner clarity I needed to represent something of such integrity. So that's it. That's my condensed story.
Can you talk about that a little bit? Because, I mean, obviously, we Gary and I both drink water. You go to the plate, you go to the grocery store, they have water that's $10 a bottle all the way down to a dollar a bottle. And then when you look in the back of it, I mean, they have all these great things where you actually think you're getting it out of a stream or a whatever, a spring, and then you look in the back and it says, you know, from the Water Authority of Cleveland or something like that. I mean,
the bottled water industry has been growing in leaps and bounds since the early 80s. I mean, many years it experiences double-digit growth. So a lot of that is because it's controlled by some of the biggest multinational corporations in the world. And most of them are literally taking tap water right from the tap.
Right.
Purifying it and selling it at a premium price. And this is what we're seeing, you know, and it's insane. All the natural springs that were once available have been bulldozed or plowed over. And, you know, you probably see when you drive around places, you see towns that are called something springs and
right.
roads that are named something springs. And that's because they were all named after springs. So.
Right.
So, yeah. Okay, you're still there. We just had a change in our sound for a second. Like, did we lose you?
Oh, no.
So I just have to say, your message is so aligned with my beliefs and I guess like, you know, I'll speak for Joel with his beliefs too. I love your message and I want so many people to be able to hear that. So I'm so glad that we had you on the show today because God, people need to hear what you just said.
Thank you. And it goes way, 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 way deeper.
Oh, absolutely.
That, you know?
Sure. And you just said it so eloquently. And, you know, sometimes it's hard to put to words your beliefs or what you feel internally. And, you know, for me anyways, you just did a really great job of explaining my belief system.
Now, how do people reach out to you? Because I think that's going to be important for our listening audience.
Well, right now, probably, I mean, I have so many business ventures and things, but probably just on Facebook for now. I still have plenty of, I can have a lot of extra friends on Facebook. So,
okay.
Just Facebook, Seth Leif Pruzanski, obviously getting the spelling of my name correct is a good thing. Pronunciation is okay.
Yep. Googled Seth Leif P because I couldn't spell it. And it just, your name comes up. So it actually, whatever search engine is going on, it actually is working for you.
Yeah. We saw all sorts of things. That popped up.
Yeah, you'll see it. Yeah, I do a lot. I put a lot of content out there and a lot of stuff, and I write and I speak and just do all that. But more importantly, as much as I get engaged in the world and do things, I spend a lot of time in self-care because it's such an important component, you know, and especially for people who've been through recovery and addiction, you know, that's really what it all comes down to. And so that's where I really, really try to encourage people to take ownership of that part of themselves.
Right.
So.
Well, and I think people are so, they just want a solution. They want someone to fix them. They turn to counselors. They turn to treatment centers. They turn to medications because they want someone to fix them. And my belief is no one is going to fix you. In my experience, I had to fix myself. I had supports, absolutely. You know, I tapped into other things, but it boils down to you. You yourself alone are the only person that can heal yourself.
Nobody's going to do for you what you need to do for yourself.
Right.
You're exactly right. That's exactly right. And you know what? I feel like for me, a lot of the reason why, you know, like I've talked to therapists and people like that since I went through like the hardcore things. I went and saw people after just to talk to them. And it's like, okay, you guys have, not to discredit anybody, because these people have PhDs. They have tremendous schooling and information, but how much direct experience do they have? Because I wanted somebody who knows what I've been through, who's experienced it, and be able to come out on the other side. And I realized that for all the book smarts that a lot of people have, there isn't a tremendous amount of direct experience. And so I was like, you know what? I have to do this. I'm going to do it. It's going to be me. And I just took it upon myself. And what was the catalyst that made me want to do that? I love my life. I love being alive. And I realized that if, you know, it was just so simple, because if I feel like a victim all the time and, oh, poor me, I just begin to think, well, what's the opposite of feeling like a victim? And it's like, well, being empowered.
Right.
And then it's like, okay, well, if I'm a victim and I feel like crap, then why wouldn't I'd much rather be empowered? So what's preventing me from being empowered? And then it's like, oh, reversing the world, reversing the way you perceive the world. And so all these kind of negative virtues that were instilled in me without me even realizing it became part of my job. I just began to really reform them and reconstruct them and perceive things in a way that was really beneficial to me, to my human organism, to my goals, to my dreams, to my aspirations. And you know what? The more you do that, the more you develop, you want other people to feel and be the same way, because you realize this is the kind of stuff that changes the world, you know?
Yeah.
No, it does.
Well, I would love to, at some point down the road, have you back on again, because
sure.
I just loved listening to you, and I think you have an incredible message that I want more and more people to hear. So I'll be in touch with you, because, again, I'd love to have you back on.
And thank you very much.
Yeah, and I'd love to
on.
Interact more with you guys, too. So.
Awesome. Well,
yeah.
Thank you so much, and enjoy the rest of your day, and have a good rest of your weekend, okay?
Okay. Thank you, guys.
Take care.
You. Well, that was great.
I really enjoyed listening
did.
To him.
Yeah, because he does, and it's everything that we're all about. Because
yeah.
I do the same thing with people when they come several times to treatment, and they always want everyone to fix them.
Yeah,
and they already walk in with the person. I said that's you know you're going to walk out with that same person, so it doesn't matter. You're going to get yourself in the way.
Yeah.
Of everything, and it's great.
No. There's some guests that we have on that really energize me, and he was one of those guests.
Yeah,
so I think it's fantastic.
I think we should go in the water. I have an idea for like hose water. Remember, like hose water used to drink out of a hose.
I do. I can remember what it tasted like.
Right.
Like
I think there's
like my youth.
There's a market for that. I think we should start. We went Sober Life bottled hose water. You're gonna get hose.
I'm gonna check out his water though.
We should. Yeah, I cannot. You know, there's only that one water that I really enjoy that tastes like silk.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Has a certain consistency.
Silky.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, it's silky. Well, you know what? I can't even say it on the air because I want to give them a plug, but. You know, it has a certain, it goes down your throat a lot easier. I don't, it's like that silky water. So,
yeah, on that note.
Yeah, on that note.
Thank you for listening.
Yeah, this has been a great, you know.
Yeah, we had a few people message me live that were listening and that were enjoying the show. So thank you guys for listening. We appreciate it.
And yeah, we have a big week.
Yep.
I don't know if we have a big week. You have a big week tomorrow, right?
Yeah, I've got the cleanup, and next week I'll talk some more about what my plans are for the next few months, because you want to talk about sober living and, you know, living your life. I got a lot of exciting things coming up.
Yeah, so they always stay tuned, and we're doing everything with starting high school.
Yeah. Take care.
Love you, Carrie.
Love you too, Joel.
Bye.